Hello and welcome to Leaning Into Light's featured interview for July 2018. My name is Jessica Rios and I'm the founder of Leaning Into Light, and this conversation is called Perspectives from a Refugee Hairstylist. This is one of our free monthly recordings to support our listeners, that's you, to lean into light. And what does that mean? Leaning into light means choosing to recover to enjoying life, to feeling good every time you fall, every time you experience pain or something awful. It's to choose to return to a place of feeling good. And this is one of the gifts we give to support humanity to lean into light every month. So grab a pen and you can pause if needed. You can take notes, because when you write things down, they are more likely to come true in your life, to be something that happens for you in your life. Writing things down is powerful. So again, welcome. And I would love to welcome our special guest, Mirsad Sindrak. Welcome, Mirsad.
Hi, Jess. Thank you.
So Mirsad, a little background on you for our listeners. Mirsad Sindrak is an upbeat, as you could tell, 29-year-old hairstylist living in Gothenburg, Sweden, which is where we both are located right now, where you, Mirsad, have lived since early childhood.
Yes, Mirsad's, that's right.
Yeah. His mother is from Bosnia and his father's from Montenegro. He was born in Sarajevo and became a refugee with his parents in 1993 during the breakup of Yugoslavia, which took place in Bosnia and Herzegovina in the early 1990s. When he's not working at Sweet November Salon in Gothenburg, he enjoys time with his boyfriend and his cat, binge-watching TV shows and being spontaneous. So that's a little background on Mirsad. And now I want to share how we met and why I wanted to interview Mirsad for this, for Leaning Into Light. So how we met, basically I asked some friends here, who do I get my hair cut by in Gothenburg? And I expected to be disappointed, and that sounds a little bizarre, but I have curly, wavy sort of hair. And I just am rarely satisfied with my haircuts. I'm not a high maintenance hair person, but I'm just rarely satisfied. So I went to Mirsad and I was like, this guy is super cool. He's fun. He's personable. Let's see how it goes. And actually I was happy with the haircut, which is a bit crazy. So, really grateful for that, but that's how we met. And I have really enjoyed our conversations when you're cutting my hair, Mirsad. And the reason for listeners, you know, why I wanted to bring Mirsad to an interview is because Leaning Into Light is basically, Mirsad, you basically embody it. You have taken some tough circumstances in life and you've turned them around. And that is not easy and it's not common. And it's a beautiful story that you have to share. So that's why you're here. And again, I'm so grateful for you being here today. So we're going to dive in now. So let's start with Mirsad, painting a picture of your early life for listeners. So first of all, where were you born? Just the location.
I was born in Sarajevo, which is the capital of Bosnia. Mm-hmm. 1989.
Uh-huh. Just the other day.
Yeah. Just the other day.
Yeah. And what was it like there as a young child? Just a little bit on like culture and religion and language, anything like that.
Well, you know what? I was so young when we left Sarajevo, so I really don't have much of a memory from there, but most of it I have from stories that my parents have told me through the years. And it was great. It was lovely. It was very multi-ethnic, upbeat, great place, and just beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Sadly, I don't remember much from it, but
yeah. Well, that's wonderful. That's what a beautiful set of memories, you know, to have, just feelings to have as a young child. And then yet when you were 3 or 4 years old, what was happening around you?
Yes. Well, the war, shortly it was a part of the breakup from Yugoslavia. So, let's see, just to make a long story short, following Bosnia's declaration of independence, Serb forces invaded Bosnia, and the war kind of took off and ended on going on for like 5 years, from 92 to, like, no. Yeah, I think it was 5 years. As you can tell, the facts are a little blurry over here, but...
Yeah, you were really young. You were really young.
I was young, yeah. And I know that Sarajevo was hit first, and it was hit really hard. Sarajevo is... there's Alps around the city, and that's how they, like, they cut off the entire town, so there was no way in or no way out, and there was no like phone service, TV station, radio stations, you know, everything was taken down. So, and the troops from Bosnia, they weren't strong enough. It wasn't large enough to, you know, make you go away, but they managed to defend like the center of Sarajevo. But the bombs were coming from the Alps, you know, and snipers, and that was what was going on.
Wow. It's striking that, you know, you were so young and you don't have. What I pick up from you is you don't really have terrorized feelings around you. You know, you could have felt really terrorized. So somehow your parents kept you feeling safe and you were able to get out. But that's a really unique and potentially horrifying experience. So,
I mean, yeah, David, I think also because I was so young, I was 3 or 4 when we came to Sweden. So I don't remember much of it, but they made it as normal. They tried to make it as normal as possible for me. And the people I met, the childhood friends I had, they have a similar background. So for me, it's weird to say now, but it was, you know, it was all I knew. So growing up, it was normal for me.
That was just happening. Yeah. So when you left, you know, on being a refugee, you're actually a refugee. So then you left your native land with your parents, and that was 1993, and you came to Sweden. Do you remember what it was like to leave?
I have these very, like, weird, it's like a dream, these images in my head. Mm. And it's almost like it was a dream because I was a kid, so... almost nothing. I remember, like, you know, New Year's Eve, just like night and a lot of sound, and that was it. Dark. The thing was, there was a tunnel through these Alps, which was kept secret. I don't know exactly like how the word spread about it, but it was the only way out. Mm. Sarajevo. We were actually living in Sarajevo for a year during the war. And then my parents decided to take me a leave. And they left everything. They left their parents. And there was no guarantee when you did this on like your own risk, but it was the only way out. And once you got past the tunnel and past left Sarajevo through the Alps, there was help on the other side. That's all I know, and that's how our journey began.
Yeah, they got you through a tunnel to safety. What a huge sort of sense of relief you must have, you know. And I do pick that up from you as you're chopping my bangs or, you know, shampooing my hair. Pick up from you a sense that life is about staying upbeat. There's just no reason not to. And it's almost like, well, yeah, when you almost had your life taken by, you know, bombs, but you made it out. Exactly. Why not? Why not? You know? So, you know, that was 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you have healed that early trauma?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I've healed it. And most of it was, as I said, I don't remember much from it. It was mostly, it's mostly from stories, you know, growing up and hearing my parents talk to me about it. Mm. But the thing I remember more is growing up here and as, you know, not a normal Swedish kid. Just like, you know, a refugee, my parents trying to, you know, get jobs, learn the language, get settled. We moved a lot and eventually we came to Gothenburg and that's where we stayed and this is where I grew up. So,
yep. Yeah, so it was lots of adaptation and being flexible and learning new things and really becoming part of a culture that wasn't yours, but now it is.
Yeah, sure.
You know, when I've, Mirsad, you live here in Gothenburg. I've only been here for 11 months, but there are a lot of refugees here. Sweden has a very generous policy with refugees, which I absolutely salute, I believe, everyone on the planet, without a sliver of a doubt, deserves a safe place to live.
Yes.
And there are a lot of refugees here. And as I look around and as my heart, which is big and sensitive, as you know, feels these people, I've wondered, you know, does it ever feel like home, like a woman who's 55 from Iran or a couple from Syria with a baby, you know, in a stroller? Does it ever feel like home? You know, I've wondered, does Sweden feel like home to you?
You know, I can only speak for myself. And since I grew up here, it does. It feels like home to me. This is where I live and it's my home and I love it here. But at the same time, I don't feel Swedish. You know, even I'm living a very, you know, Swedish normal life. So it's almost, you know, surrealistic, like bizarre to think about these things like that we're talking about right now, that it's part of my past.
Yeah.
But yeah, it feels like home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for me, there is sort of a surrealness. You certainly fit in here. There's no question, but I can see what you mean. It's, yeah, this isn't where you're from. It's
No. And I had a different upbringing and, you know, it was important for my parents to maintain our own, you know. I had to speak Bosnian with them to not forget, you know, and we had a lot of Bosnian friends. And as soon as the war was over, we've been going to Bosnia for like spending every summer there.
Mm.
Basically, so
the connection is still alive for you there very much.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. How would you say, just to give us a take, do you still speak Bosnian?
Yes.
Yes. So how do you say hello, listeners?
You say, zdravo, slušatelji.
Whoa. Wow. That is so beautiful. Oh, all right. Can you give us
a lot of people. I've been told that it sounds it's similar to like Russian or Polish.
Mm. Oh, it's just gorgeous. I can't believe this is the first time I've ever asked you to say something in Bosnian. That's it. Yeah. My next haircut, I request full Bosnian.
It's going to be all in Bosnian. Bring a dictionary.
yeah, for sure. So let's turn to another subject in your life, Mirsad. You're a gay man. And
I am.
Your parents got you out of war. I mean, holy moly, we could go on about that, right? And they're Christian, right?
No, they're actually Muslims.
They're Muslims, okay. And their religious background led them to, correct me here if I'm wrong, but they weren't so content about you being gay.
Well, yeah, no, they weren't. And you know, when you say, like, I understand when somebody hears that, you know, for the first time, you get a certain, you get a certain picture of a person, or you can't just judge a person on that. You have to know the full story. I can say it like this. I had great parents, and they were, you know, they did the best they could, and they did a good job me growing up. But this was, it was like not okay. And I see it now, you know, when I was 17 years old and I came out to them, I've been through all the phases. Like, you know, I was angry. I was an angry teenager. I was this and I was that and I was sad. But now I can see it in a different way. I'm not defending it, but I understand that they only like wanted what was best for me in their beliefs, yep. You know, and yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually I don't hear any defense in your sharing. What I hear is a highly compassionate, mature response to how they saw things. You put yourself in their shoes and you see why they saw it that way. And that's you're 29, you're so young. And yet that level of awareness is the kind that heals the world. We don't heal the world by, you know, raging against people who don't accept gays or people with darker colored skin or anything.
No, we don't.
Is a difference in some, you know, in some place. But you're talking to a woman who was born in San Francisco,
yeah.
You know, a place of where gay history is really strong. And so, you know, to not be accepted for being gay, it's like, what? That happens? Oh yeah, it happens. Yeah. And here's why, you know. So are you still in touch with your parents?
I am not, actually. And let's make a long story short. When I came out to them, they were, you know, it was like I expected. They were devastated. They were crushed. But they took it okay. It wasn't like anger, you know, get out of my house. It wasn't like that at all. It was more like, we're going to get through this. We're going to help you, you know. And I realized that I was trying to tell them, like, I don't need help. I need you to accept me. And, you know, we just didn't get along. And we separated. Yeah. That's what happened.
Yeah. They were trying to fix something that wasn't broken, and you couldn't get past that. And
yeah, exactly. And we didn't speak for, like, 2 years, and then I was trying a little bit, you know, to work them, and we just ended up on the same page, and it was really hurting me. It was hurting me because I was angry at myself for still trying or still having, you know, hope or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you're missing out on anything in their lives by not being in touch with them?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, I've spent a lot of time, you know, I spent many years feeling, you know, angry, sad, feeling like I miss out, missing them. And, but right now I don't know. It sounds bad to say it, but I don't. I'm very happy with my life. Of course, you know, you get sad sometimes and you think about it, but now it's more like I feel like they are missing out, and it's more, I can feel bad for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a little guilt, you know.
Yeah. But you've forgiven them, so you're not holding on to something in that way, but they are missing out. You're a beautiful human being and you're their son, and they are missing out. And yet, you know, not being able to accept somebody for being whatever they are, Well, that's really sad. That is sad. And
I know it is. And it's so hard, you know, as I sit here, you know, thinking about this was so long ago and trying to remember all the details. I can just say it was a beautiful like separation. It was more like, okay, if this is what, you know, you want to do, this is something we do not support, and I chose my way, and it's what happened.
What do you think it would take, Mirsad? You know, this is a big question, but
yeah,
what do you think it will take for people who are afraid of other people's sexual orientations to become accepting of these natural human differences?
Oh my God, that is a hard question, because it's really so simple. And
about that.
But it's so simple. It's just like, because I had a soft religious upbringing. So there was a part of my life. That's why I understand my parents. I'm not defending them, but I understand it, because there was a part of my life when I was scared, I was afraid, because, you know, I thought that I was doing something wrong, or I prayed, you know, for change, because I was afraid, because I've been told my entire life. And unfortunately, that's what most religions do. It's a sin, you know?
Yeah.
But after a while, I realized that you have to find your own way in believing and interpret. And this is a hard word. Help me. Interpreting.
Yeah.
Say it just.
Interpreting.
Yes. Thank you. And I try to be a good person, nice, you know, the things I value and what I think a good person is and what I think right and wrong is. And not, you know, what some book, agent book says, because it made sense then. It didn't make sense to me, you know, the whole religious, every aspect of it, because I couldn't see what I was doing wrong by loving somebody else. That's when it became hard for me, you know, to, what can I say? Like, live by that.
Yeah. Well, you were looking for something wrong where it doesn't exist. So it's
exactly. that was a long blabber.
Tired of looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
it's a hard question to answer. And just like see the person in front of you, you know, and.
See the person in front of you. And what I hear, and these are my words, I'm not putting words in your mouth, but what I hear, you know, and this is how we see it at Leaning Into Light, is look inside your heart. Look at the light inside your heart, the beauty, the love that you're made of, and see from there. And when we see from there, we don't see anything broken in anybody else, because there is nothing broken in anybody else.
And it's actually nobody else's business. You know, it's, as long as you're not doing anybody else anything wrong, or as long as you're not hurting anybody.
Yeah.
What's the big deal, you know?
When you're actually having a lot more fun than most people I know, Mirsad, so.
I am.
Yes, I love that about you. So thank you for sharing that. And let's move into just, some sharing for listeners who might be able to benefit from some of what you've learned in your, you know, relatively short life. What do you think was the most, as you think back in your life, what was the most difficult time in your life? And just in a few words, you know, how did you get through it?
Well, it's definitely the part, you know, when I came out to my parents, I wasn't ready. It's a long story, but it kind of happened. And it was horrible. I felt like I let down everybody and my whole family. And it was just a dark time. But and losing everything, my whole life changed, you know?
Yeah.
And so young, but my friends, you know, they were everything. I have great friends. And, you know, that that's also like, it's a family you choose by yourself. I don't know if I would have made it up without such a great group of friends. But also, I have this weird kind of like, you know, a sense of humor. I don't know, call it what you want, but positive thinking, I guess. Try not to take things so seriously. I kind of think whatever happens, whether it's bad or good, like it's not going to matter in like 80 years because I'll be dead. And yep. It's just, you know, when it's a big problem or something terrible happens, it kind of minimizes it. So I try to stay positive and think that, you know, this too shall pass. And
it does.
It does. And whatever happens, you know, there'll come a day when you look back at it. And as I do now, and talking about these things, it doesn't feel bad. It doesn't hurt. Mm. And, you know, 10 years ago, I would have never imagined that.
Right.
But now it almost feels like I'm sharing somebody else's story, you know? And
wow. That's incredible. Cause you described it as being so dark. And now when I'm with you, you know, you're a real being of light. You're a real being of uplifted, upbeat, just, you know, humor and truly, you know, you're not escaping. It's just a feeling of genuine light.
But you know what? Like enjoying stuff, you know, taking your time and actually enjoying when something nice happens or acknowledging the positive things in your life. It's something that we, unfortunately, we do it very rarely. We like to, I can talk about myself. I like to complain, you know, when something happens. If I have a bad day, you don't wake up. When you have a good day, you kind of take it for granted. So, you know, focus a little bit on the positive things in life. Yeah. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And it said, you know, what we focus on grows. So by focusing on the positive, you stay there. So specifically, Mirsad, for listeners who are refugees or for those people, and there are a lot of them, who are living somewhere that doesn't really feel like home to them, what would you say?
Oh my God, that's hard. But I would say that there's nothing wrong with you, that you're okay, and there are people that will love you no matter what, and appreciate you and respect you and think you're awesome. So find that.
Yeah.
I think I would say, and be brave and want more for yourself in life.
Yeah.
You deserve it.
So beautiful. Yeah. It's, you know, it's that kind of beautiful wisdom, even again, in such a young person, that probably is part of why people come to you outside of the great haircuts. So
I'm actually a really bad hairdresser. No, I'm just
it's only the huge wisdom. Yeah. Well, and it's that kind of wisdom that really, you know, gives me more of a sense of trust in the future. So beautiful. So, you know, again, on that note, for listeners who feel rejected, and there are so many, because of their sexual orientation and struggle with that, what insight would you share with them? Would it be the same or different?
It would be the same, but I would add, I've been there as well. And I know what it's like, you know, when you grow up, you have your parents, you love them, they teach you right and wrong. So if you live and you've been told that something is wrong your entire life, it's so difficult, but it doesn't mean that that's true. And try to see the good in you and don't let anybody else tell you what's right or what's wrong, or, you know, that's what I would like to add to that.
It's really big, you know, it's really what you've done, as you just shared those words. You took what you had been told all your life and you changed your mind about it because you also believed that in some way, something was wrong with you. You were trying to change it. And yet you knew in a deeper place than what you had been told, you knew nothing is wrong with you. And now you don't doubt that at all. You know that for sure. And may we send that message, you know, right now to everyone on this planet who thinks there's something wrong with them, that it's just not true. And like you said, Mirsad, you know, be brave and want more for yourself. There are people out there who will love you and appreciate you and think you're awesome. There's no question about that. But it is ourself, you know, we have to believe that, right?
Of course.
Willing to go out. So thank you, Mirsad. Is there any one last thing you want to share with listeners, or any other thoughts that we left out about your journey that you feel?
I would like to say thank you, Jess, and thank you for it. It was an honor, and I think you're great as well. And thank you for all the kind, nice words. You make me feel really special. So you're awesome.
You're so welcome, and it's my pleasure. One way that I take care of myself is showering love on other people. So again, Mirsad, thank you so much for the beautiful work you've done as a human being in this world. You have set an example. You've set the bar high for anyone who knows you and hears these stories, or even doesn't hear a word from you, but just gets to be around you. You are making the world a more light-based, more love-based place. And I genuinely salute you for that. And I appreciate you being on this this little interview with me for Leaning Into Light.
And thank you so much.
You're welcome, and for the great haircuts. So to listeners, by the way, if you're in Gothenburg, Sweden, and you want a good haircut, just call Sweet November, and they'll connect you with Mirsad. Or maybe you just want some therapy disguised in a haircut. No, just kidding. But listeners, thanks for coming back. If you're enjoying these monthly recordings, I am so glad to know that they're giving something back to you, that they're reminding you what a beautiful specimen of life you are. And if you found it useful today, show love to someone else in your life by sharing it with someone who's maybe sitting at a desk all day or commuting long hours, and they could use an upbeat message. We're not on social media right now, so I'm taking a break. So just go to the website, leaningintolight.com. Go to our conversations page and you'll find it there. And much love to each and every one of you. May your journey be light, and we'll see you next time.